Hey, good morning. Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. We're going to be with you for the next hour talking about money, money, and money, starting off with the to be or not to be question. And I don't know whether that was Frank Sinatra or William Shakespeare that said to be or not to be, but when you talk to federal workers, and particularly federal retirees, the issue is for them is, do I purchase Medicare Part B? And here to talk to us about that and all other things retirement-related is David Snell. He is Director of Retirement Benefits at the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. And, David, you're a retired Fed yourself, correct?
Absolutely correct. And good morning to you, Mike. Good to be here. I'm retired from the Office of Personnel Management.
So you know whence it comes and all that. David, we've got a load of questions for you today. Got a batch of questions for David Snell from NARF. Starting with, let me just get this one out of the way. Looking at Medicare Part B, so that it costs a couple over $220 a month currently, and the price is going up. Bottom line is, do I need it? Is it worth it? And first off, do you know what the cost is going to be next year?
The basic Medicare cost for 2012 will be $99.90 a month. Now, that's going to be an increase for some Medicare beneficiaries who have been under the safe harbor provisions of Social Security the last 2 years and are still paying $96.40.
So $99.99, did you say?
$99.90.
Okay. That's like a cable TV ad.
But for those civil service retirees or state and local retirees who are not eligible for Medicare, Social Security, and have had to pay the $115.40 this year, this will be a decrease in Medicare premiums for them, which is good news.
Good news and further confusion. Now, what's the difference, A, between Medicare Part A and Medicare Part B?
Well, Medicare Part A is basically your hospitalization costs. When you go into a hospital and the costs associated with that. Medicare Part B is your doctor and medical expenses. Part A for most people is premium free, and we suggest everybody take that. Part B, as we've already discussed, comes with a premium, a monthly premium. But it is voluntary. You don't have to enroll in Part B, despite what a lot of people think when they reach age 65. The medical costs that Part B provide, the coverage, is very similar to what current feds receive under their Federal Employees Health Benefits Program plan. So the question always comes up, do I need to enroll in Medicare Part B? And we, as you started your program out, to be or not to be mm-hmm. is the question. First of all, let's get rid of the myth that you have to have it. You don't have to enroll in Medicare Part B. Secondly, be aware that the benefits provided by Part B are very similar or actually duplicate the benefits you're going to get under the all the plans in the FEHB, with the exception of prescription drugs. Part B does not provide any prescription drug coverage, but the plans under the FEHB provide good prescription drug coverage. They vary a little, and which is why if you are covered under an FEHB plan and later decide to get extra help with prescription drugs by enrolling in Medicare Part D, the prescription drug plan, you won't be charged a penalty because the benefits that are provided by the FEHB plans are equal, if not better, than those under Medicare Part D.
Okay, so it's sort of your call. And now I'm a belt, suspenders, and parachute, and a crash helmet guy. So I think I would get it. But you're saying that, and I think you also said that in an earlier conversation that if you decide to get Part B, then with the open season coming up, you maybe can downsize your federal health plan, get one with lower premiums, and you'll still have very good coverage, right?
Absolutely. That's the options that are available. If you decide you need that Medicare Part B, either because of current medical problems or foreseen ones, or if, like you, it just helps you sleep at night. So if you decide to spend that extra $100 a month, and you're in a plan now under the FEHB that is expensive, maybe, you don't need to pay that much.
Okay.
Go to the open season websites if you're a federal employee. Find the plan that fits your budget and change during the open season.
Okay, that's good. Now, go to another. We got a lot of questions here for David Snell from NARF. Start out with Lynn from NIH, and this is typical in Washington when it's a mixed marriage. We don't mean it's interracial or a religious. It's a federal worker marrying a non-federal worker, and this is the case here. It says, I'll retire in 5 years from the NIH. Do I need to have my wife on my policy for the next 5 years to be able to have her covered under my policy when I retire? And he's referring, of course, to the 5-year rule. And that's a tricky question, isn't it?
Well, it is. And people are confused sometimes about this. If the federal retiree meets the requirements to continue their FEHB coverage into retirement, they can do that as a self only, and at any time after they retire, they want to put their spouse on because their spouse loses coverage under their group plan, they can do so. Or they can do so at any open season.
Now, this person is still working. So is there, would if he, or it's he, I think, if he died before he retired and had a single plan, only plan, the wife would be out in the cold, right?
That's correct. The stipulations are you have to have a self and family plan for the spouse to continue that health benefits if you die before you're retired. After retirement, the requirements are that you, at retirement, elected to provide a survivor benefit for the spouse, and in that case, if you died with self and family and an election to provide a survivor benefit, the spouse would continue to have coverage. But if you're retired and you only have self-only coverage, despite the fact that you had elected to have a survivor benefit, if you only had self-only coverage after you retire, and you predecease your spouse, that spouse will not be eligible to have that continued coverage.
The safe thing is to have a family plan, period. Sign up this coming open season. Here's one from Pat Barkley. Says, my wife's been told by Blue Cross Blue Shield that after I retire, she can drop off my FEHBP plan and come back into it in the next open season. And we've been with FEHBP for 5 years, me, 30, she, 11. She has state health insurance. She will not drop off the FEHBP until I retire. Does that make sense?
Well, it does if the state is continuing to provide good coverage they're paying for self and family right now, and her coverage under the state is cheaper. But again, the risk is that should something happen to the retiree, in this case, the federal retiree, while he's in a self-only plan, then he predeceases her, she won't be able to have that coverage as a survivor, even if something happens to herself, her state health plans.
So again, the safe thing is to get a family plan.
Well, get a family plan or keep all that in mind, know what's coming.
Okay. All right, need to take a short break here, talking with David Snell from National Active and Retired Federal Employees. We'll be right back here on Your Turn.
Raise high for GW basketball. Some raise high with the jump out of your seat, buzzer beating, hands to the sky scream. Others give their all in the GW fight song, Raising High the Buff and Blue. Raising High is more than just a movement. It's the movement for Colonials basketball, where senators and students, friends and families come together for the thrill of victory. Raise High with GW basketball today. Call 202-994-7325 or visit gwsports.com now.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio. Please join me this week for my special guest, Doug Wolford, President and Chief Operating Officer of Convergent Wealth Advisors. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the law firm of Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area and clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about the firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Tom Harper is the CIO at Los Alamos National Lab. He said the lab recently allowed wireless access to its unclassified network and now is looking to do more.
Trying to understand, where does it make sense to have this in classified environments? You know, where you want to have unclassified information, can it be wireless? And we're even looking into, how do we move into doing classified information movement over wireless devices.
Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
The Cloud Conundrum, Public, Private, or Both? A panel discussion with experts from government and industry, sponsored by Brocade. Panelist Chris Smith, CIO of USDA.
Internally, we stood up our own private cloud offerings as we were doing data center consolidation. I started out by saying it was an evolution. 2 years ago, we knew the value that was in sharing compute, getting higher virtualization levels, getting a more secure platform. So we've been on that path. We've seen a 60% reduction in operating expenses. And that's huge. And we look at our rates every year to say, okay, are we competitive within the government? Space, we're cross-servicing other folks.
Cloud innovations are here. Is your network optimized? Accelerate to the cloud with Brocade's new technology and business models. Brocade's cloud-optimized solutions provide a foundation to help organizations migrate to private clouds. What does this mean to your agency? Increased utilization, simplified management, and an agile organization. That's why Brocade solutions are used in over 90% of global 1,000 data centers. Learn how Brocade will transition your organization to a virtualized world. Go to federalnewsradio.com, search Cloud.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by CenturyLink Government. Identify the federal agency problem.
Am I number E enough? All the other information is way prettier. I look fat in this network, don't I?
The answer? Insecure data. With CenturyLink's comprehensive suite of security solutions, even your most sensitive data stays protected. For a free risk assessment, visit CenturyLink.com/federal.
How can federal agencies drive performance in a cutback climate? What are the latest best practices for maximizing efficiency in federal programs? Join HUD Secretary Sean Donovan and hundreds of federal managers to learn how to achieve more with less at Excellence in Government, the Efficiency Imperative, on November 17th in Washington, D.C. Register today to save 35%. At www.excelgov.com.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and I'm talking with David Snell. He's Director of Retirement Services at the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. And David, you, NARF, to give a plug for NARF, many people think of it as a retiree-only organization, despite the name, but you've got more and more people who are working for the government, but know they're going to retire someday, and they want a piece of the action and the benefits that NARF can, being a NARF member, can give them.
Yes, NARF represents all federal employees and retirees and their spouses, and we've been around for 90 years. We are the only organization devoted solely to lobbying on behalf of federal employees. And we urge employees to join because we allows them to keep up on the news that's beneficial for them.
It's worth it for the magazine alone. But I know I'm a NARF member myself. Back to the questions here. This is from Earl, and he says, I'm retired with Federal Blue Cross Blue Shield. Oh, I asked you that one. I'm sorry. That's the supplemental plan. He wants to know if there's a – he's got part A and B, and he can afford it.
Right.
And is there a supplemental plan that would be better?
Well, is he talking about the Medicare Part C advantage?
Doesn't mention it.
Okay.
He does say Medicare – yeah, but can I – by Medicare supplement or advantage plan.
Okay. Well, if he can find – there are a lot of Medicare Part C advantage plans out there. There's some on fee-for-service, some are HMO, something to fit just about everybody. And some of them even include prescription drug coverage, and the rates are pretty reasonable. If you're under the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program and you've got Medicare Part A and B, it might be worth your while to look at the Medicare Part C Advantage Plan and see if there's one that fits you a little better. The good news in all that is, even though you may drop out of the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, you're not canceling. You're suspending your enrollment, which in order to be covered under the Medicare Part C Advantage Plan. And the benefit to that is for retirees that they can then at a later date, if they choose, go back and re-enroll in the FEHB program, something that
Well, that's a deal. Most private plans do not take older people. They're glad to have you leave, and they do not want you back.
Right.
Here's one. I guess we've answered this, too. This is from Marge in Alexandria. It says, I'm a retiree, and I can't find out what the Medicare premium is going to be for 2012. Went to the website and only found information pertaining to 2011. But you said earlier it was $99.90 a month. Is that
that's
right?
That's the basic monthly premium. If you're subject to the income adjustment levels, it may be higher. But the basic premium for 2012 is $99.90. And it is on the website, at Medicare website. So okay. I would suggest, Marge, take a look at the Medicare website.
I know once the benefits are announced, the benefit changes are announced, we now know the premiums for 2012. But once we find out about the benefit changes, Walton Francis of the Washington Consumer Checkbook was going to complete his guide that has become the Bible for so many people, how to look up the best deal for you. You are also deeply involved in this, particularly as it pertains to all employees, but particularly in this case, retirees, since you're the only one. What are some if retiree taking Medicare Part A and B? To get the prescriptions coverage and whatnot. And you suggested that if they do that, if they take B, particularly if money is an issue, they might want to downsize their health plan, get a good plan, but one with lower premiums. What are some of those?
Well, if you're the most popular plan right now is Blue Cross and Blue Shield Standard, and it gives you good benefits. The premium is in the mid 400s a month. It went down it's going to go down a couple of bucks in 2012. Another good health plan that's about half the cost of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield is the GEHA plan. It gives identical benefits, and most of their preferred providers are the same ones that or preferred providers under Blue Cross and Blue Shield. And I mentioned preferred providers because that's an important aspect of health coverage under the federal plan. You will save yourself a lot of money if your doctors that you normally visit are preferred providers under the plan that you choose. But going back to the lower cost plans, there's also Blue Cross Basic, especially if you're in Medicare Part A, if you're enrolled in Medicare Part A and B, and your federal plan is basically just a supplement to the Medicare coverage, then those premiums are also very low. The mail handler's value plan is another one. And as long as you use their preferred providers, you'll have very good coverage with all three of those and be saving yourself some money.
So both of the Blues and the mail handlers, what do you call it, value plan?
The mail handlers, yes, value plan are good values. And I will say that I've seen for 2012, while the Blue Cross and Blue Shield standard went down a couple of bucks, the Blue Cross Blue Shield basic, the one I was just referring to, their premiums increased. And what that tells me is there's been some migration there, especially with seniors, from the standard to the basic, which is kind of an adverse selection phenomenon, in which because seniors normally cost more to provide coverage for, it costs the plan more, and therefore their premiums will go up. And it looks to me like there's been a migration out of the standard by seniors into the lower cost plan.
Okay, and seniors don't like to hear that, but they do cost more. It's a fact. I mean, it's considerably more too, isn't it?
Considerably more than healthier active feds, and people are going to be living longer. You know, if you reach age 65, you have a very good chance of living then. 85.
Well, one of the beauties of the federal program is the even as plans drop out, you still have so many options. I think in the Washington area, you can choose from about 20 to 25 different plans and or variations. I haven't said anything about HMOs, and we're about running out of time here. But health maintenance organizations, you go to their providers, which is you typically do now with fee for service, or you actually go to their facility. It may be like a one stop shopping kind of thing. What do you think about HMOs for retirees?
I think HMOs can be a great deal if the individual is in that area and they like the providers and they like the facilities. I think an HMO can really help reduce their health costs. You have very little out-of-pocket expenses with HMOs. There are some HMOs, however, across the country, not necessarily around here, where the premiums are very high. And I wouldn't suggest for retirees to get into those. But the ones around here, the premiums are pretty reasonable, and they give good coverage. Skilled nursing care, for instance, while some of the fee-for-service plans will have benefits for skilled nursing facilities in connection with Medicare Part A and Part B, the HMOs have much better coverage from the brochures that I've read. So there are aspects of HMOs that are very good.
Well, that's good, and we're going to have you back during the open season, and we'll do this again, and we'll have not only the premiums in front of us, but also the benefit changes. We're told that they're very very modest, and so it's really just a matter of looking at the premiums. And you always tell people to when they're looking at a health plan, to use the preferred provider option. That's the one they want you to use. And one way to find out if that's good is to take it to your doctor. Somebody in his or her office can look at it and they say, yeah, we take this, we don't take that.
Absolutely. That's the easiest way. If you've got your own doctors and that you like and everything, and you're thinking about changing plans, ask them, and they'll tell you, yeah, we're a preferred provider under this plan or that plan, or we're not. And, of course, the health plans themselves have preferred provider booklets that they will send to individuals when they ask for them.
Right. The problem with that is that they do change. I think it's better to go directly to the doctor. Thank you, David Snell, for being with us. David is with the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. We'll be right back talking with Steve Losey from the Federal Times about what else is going on.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko. And I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above. which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. GEICO, the Government Employees Insurance Company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about GEICO's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Facing a new day, delivering services efficiently, improving citizens' lives, Booz Allen Hamilton supports the most important challenges of government, from defense and economic security to health and cyber solutions. Booz Allen strategy and technology consultants partner with clients to deliver results that endure. Whether managing today's issues or looking beyond the horizon, clients can count on Booz Allen to help them be ready for what's next. BoozAllen.com/ready for what's next.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio. Please join me this week for my special guest, Doug Wolford, President and Chief Operating Officer of Convergent Wealth Advisors. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the law firm of Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area and clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about the firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships who understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity, working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at TechSystems.com. TEKSystems.com.
In an era of fiscal constraint marked by shrinking budgets and increasing demands on services, how are local government executives leveraging innovation, common sense, and technology to make a real difference? What is New York City doing to innovatively deliver health and human services? Join host Michael Keegan as he discusses New York City's efforts with Linda Gibbs, Deputy Mayor for Health and Human Services of the City of New York. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Department of Veterans Affairs says it's planning ahead to make sure it keeps pace with mobile technology. VA's approach to the development of mobile apps will be to design software that will work on a variety of different tablets and smartphones. The department says since it can't forecast which company will be dominant in the mobile field 5 years from now, it doesn't want to pump money into app development for a platform that might not last. VA's plans include the deployment of up to 100,000 new mobile devices.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Just spoke with David Snell, Director of Retirement Services at the National Active and Retired Employees Association. Got a good take on what people active and retired should be looking at as far as Medicare Part B is going. Now we're going to move over to the news side of it and talk with Steve Losey from the Federal Times. Steve, you with us?
I'm here. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, thanks for being on. We are our pirate radio, as we call it. And looking at your the front page of the Federal Times this week, you guys have been very, very busy. Seems to be a lot of stuff going on One thing that intrigues me is the Defense Department, as you reported, is considering going to a pass-fail system.
That's right. This is something that a working group consisting of labor and management representatives have recommended to the Pentagon. It's far from certain whether this is going to be enacted as the working group suggested. The DoD could take and leave any of these suggestions. So what ends up being enacted could end up looking very differently. But right now, the working group is recommending going to a two-tier rating system, and they're advocating completely changing the culture of how the DoD looks at its civilian workforce management. Right now, basically, if you're a DoD worker, you pretty much just get an evaluation once at the end of the year, and your boss says, "Hey, Mike, you did a great job, bang up job, good work," or they say, "Mike, you're just not, it's not, you're not cutting it." And a lot of times, for a lot of workers, that's the first time they've heard anything about how they're doing. What the working group is recommending is that there be a series of continual evaluations, constant feedback, quarterly reviews, things like that. And the working group is saying that if you do that in conjunction with the two-tier rating system, the pass-fail system they're talking about, this could actually overhaul how the DoD evaluates and evaluates and measures its employees' performance.
You know, it's intriguing. I've been around even longer than you have, but you see the somebody reinventing the wheel about every 4 or 5 years. And
yeah,
you go to these different systems and MBO, management by objectives, and there was another system. Then we had the National Security Personnel System, which was a creature of the Bush administration, and the idea was that it would give, would let defense reward top workers and punish those who weren't doing well, and everybody would be apprised of what was going on at all times. That was the coin of the realm for about 4 years. Lots of money was spent in training people for it. Lots of money was spent in cycling people into it. And then lots of money was spent on a variety of raises, which tended to be better, I think, than the GS people. Then the Democrats take over the White House, and with the to placate the unions, they finally got rid of the system. They said it's the worst possible system in the world. It does everything wrong, and it plays favorites, and it was only used in people who were not in bargaining units, and unions had no input into it. So this is another bite at the apple, huh?
Yeah, that's right. You know, this working group is a direct outgrowth, after effect of the killing of NSPS, which happened in 2009. When Congress passed the bill, they said they ordered DoD to come up with a new system and to put together a working group that figures out how this new thing is going to look. So this is a definite aftershock of the demise of NSPS. Now, one thing I think is interesting is that you correctly noted that the unions were, to say the least, not too pleased about NSPS, and it looks like this group is kind of running far, far away from anything that even smacks of NSPS. Since NSPS, the notion of pay performance is like putting a garlic in front of Dracula. You know, they recoil.
Yeah.
NSPS killed the legitimacy of pay performance, what little there was in unions' minds. It's going to be interesting to see where this goes. The DoD is looking at it. The Pentagon's looking at it. They're not saying when they're going to, you know, decide on what they want to do, but it could be in the next couple of weeks. Could be a few months. Maybe we'll see late December, early January. It's hard to say, but we'll definitely be keeping an eye out on this, because what they do end up with could end up conceivably being, you know, emulated by other agencies. It's always possible. DoD tends to be the sort of the petri dish that experiments with things that the rest of the government copies. So
that's a good point, because the buyouts started with defense, right?
Yeah. DoD's had several buyouts, and agencies are kind of following in that lead. Their lead, yeah.
Well, it's intriguing that the law of unintended consequences, which is one of my favorite things, when they started the National Security Personnel System, whatever the real motives behind it were, whether they were sinister or good, the idea was that managers could manage better, they could reward top people and gig or punish those who weren't doing real well. The unions objected to it, and the unions were not
given any buy-in to speak of, mm-hmm. and some said it was a tool to bust the unions. But at any rate, that meant that only people who were not represented by unions or not in bargaining units could be put in NSPS. And some people say, as a result of that, defense gave those people better raises than they would have had under the old system, partially to sell it and partially to kind of stick it in the eye of critics.
Yeah, there were a lot of people who got some very sizable raises under NSPS. And, yeah, some of I can't recall exactly what the average raises were, but, yeah, sometimes they were bigger than the cost of living adjustments that Congress passed every year.
Right, and it created a problem, too, because when they're cycling these people back into the regular GS system, some of them didn't fit or came back at much higher grades or much higher steps because of the raises they had received.
That's right, and there's several thousand people who are under what's called pay retention because their salary is above the step 10 of their new/old GS grade, so they can't receive step increases, they can't receive the full cost of living adjustments that Congress passes. So until the GS scales catch up, they're going to be getting half the COLA raise that everyone else gets. That is, when there is a COLA raise, which we don't have right now.
That's right. And people who say they're unlucky don't realize that they got their raises up front. Better to get it early than late. But still, they're now feeling like poor stepchildren because they're only going to get a half of the raise, as you say, the next time there is one.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, one could become cynical after a while looking at this. They reinvent the wheel. The people who seem to make out best, there may be some politicals and some civil servants who have a major interest in it. But a lot of times it's these outside consultants who are brought in and given multi-million-dollar contracts to train the government people on how this works. And then 3, 4, 5 years later, a new group of contractors or maybe the same group of people comes in and tells them how to get out of the mess they put them in.
It's a perpetual motion machine. Yeah,
yeah. It makes for full employment. I guess if it wasn't that way, you and I would be doing the weather or something.
That's true. Yeah. For example, you know, this new performance management proposal centers on a two-tier rating system that some say is kind of a pass-fail system, and the government's tried that before. And from the experts I've spoken to, they said it kind of fell out of favor. And some people who I've talked to about the DoD's the thing the DoD is considering, they're kind of skeptical as to whether a pass-fail can work because you either you succeed or you don't. It doesn't provide much opportunity in the rating process to separate the guy who goes to work, he gets his job done, doesn't really excel, and the guy who, say, catches Osama bin Laden. You know, there's a wide gulf in performance there that a two-tier system doesn't quite encapsulate.
Yeah, that's right, and there's not much wiggle room there. I guess if you fail, presumably you could be fired or not given a raise or not given the locality portion.
That's right. You know, some people could be removed. If you're not removed, you're most likely going to be put on what's called a performance improvement plan where they spell out, you know, hey, shape and straighten up and fly right.
Yeah. Hey, moving to another issue, are federal workers overpaid or underpaid? And about 14 months ago, the media suddenly discovered federal workers, and using data from some conservative think tanks, they first came out and said federal workers are paid more than the average American. True. Then they came out and said that federal workers doing the same jobs are paid more than non-federal workers doing the same jobs. And there have been a series of these stories from all over, half a dozen newspapers, been picked up around the country. And, of course, what's happening in state and local governments shows there is this tied this reaction to the cost of government, retirement benefits and things like that. But the bottom line, the thing we've been hearing for a good 14 months now is that federal workers are overpaid by 20-30%, depending on whose figures you use and which apples are compared to which oranges. Now comes the government's pay agent, the official people that were set up in the bipartisan 1990 law designed to make government pay reasonable, fair, and all of that sort of thing. And they come along and they say government workers are underpaid by a factor of, what did you have in your column, 24%?
It was 24%. And last...
See, can I interrupt you there? They get a signal to, they're making a spinning thing, and I think that means we've got to take a break. But I'll be right back here, and I'll ask you, are they overpaid or underpaid? Who knows what they're talking about? Be right back.
Do you know us? You count on our technology every day. The office elevator that takes you up and down efficiently. The jet engine that gets you home safely. The fire suppression system you hope you never need, but know is there. You count on things we make to protect you from harm, and even to keep you cool and comfortable. Our technologies are a critical part of your everyday life. Yet many people don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. Six businesses united as one powerful company. In fact, we are one of the largest manufacturers in the United States, which likely makes us the biggest company you've never heard of, even though you depend on us every single day. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at UTC.com.
Where did you leave it? Where could it have possibly gone? It's frustrating because you used to have your motivation with you all the time, and now, ugh, that's okay. We'll help you find it. First, let's find your reason. You know, your reason. What's that thing that makes you want to live to an age where you can say whatever you want to whomever you want, and somehow it becomes charming? Next, find your thing. What is that healthy thing you actually love doing? There's got to be one, right? Finally, go find your partner. Who's the ping to your pong? The downward to your dog? Who'll keep your butt moving and vice versa? Find all of those things. We're pretty sure your motivation will magically appear. But if you're still having trouble finding it, try looking really, really hard in the mirror. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we're here to help you find your motivation to thrive. Visit kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
We raise high for GW basketball. Some raise high with the jump out of your seat, buzzer beating, hands to the sky scream. Others give their all in the GW fight song, Raising High the Buff and Blue. Raising High is more than just a movement. It's the movement for Colonials basketball, where senators and students, friends and families come together for the thrill of victory. Raise High with GW basketball today. Call 202-994-7325 or visit gwsports.com now.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum. But there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. Geico offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to Geico. So no matter if you're blue, or red, or in my case, green. If you're a federal employee, GS7 or above, contact Geico and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Join a firm at their December 8th luncheon for an in-depth discussion of government contracting trends and techniques. Hear highlights on what's hot and what's not in federal acquisition as Tech America unveils usage trends for IDIQs, GWACs, and schedule contracts. A lively panel moderated by Wyatt Cash of AOL Government will follow with experts from NASA, GSA, NIH, and Navy discussing innovations in government contracting. Lunch and learn with a firm at the Sofitel Hotel on Thursday, December 8th at noon. Register today at affirm.org.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking to Steve Losey, the senior writer with the Federal Times. Before we were so rudely interrupted, when they make that spinning noise that tells you to that time is running out, the first time I saw it, I thought I had to turn my head, and it was a mess. But I've learned, and Steve, we're back. We were talking about federal workers. Are they overpaid? Are they underpaid? Both sides have interesting statistics that look pretty good. And assume for a minute that this is not a right-wing plot or a left-wing plot, that it's not that the people that are saying these things genuinely feel it, genuinely mean it. How can you possibly have a spread like that?
You can't. I mean, one or the other has got to be right. There is one thing that should be pointed out. When the government says federal employees are now paid 26.3% less than private sector workers, they're just looking at salaries. Groups like the Heritage Foundation, which says that federal employees are compensated 30-40% more than private sector, they're factoring in benefits, whereas the government does not. And it's partly how you look at it, but whether you include benefits or you don't, and which benefits you include, which benefits you don't include. But there's also, to be honest, there's also a lot of sort of behind the scenes adjusting of the data, sampling, estimating, doing statistical analysis that might account for some of these differences. And to be perfectly frank, I've been trying to look into and find out more about how these numbers are massaged, how they're considered, how they're evaluated, how they account for things like differences in experience, differences in locality, differences in responsibility levels, and there's a lot of disagreement on how you do that. So those are some of the things that might help account for some of the wide gulf in conclusions we're seeing from the government groups like Heritage.
Well, that idea to include benefits or not in the package, everybody feels strongly about it. It's interesting to note a historical perspective here. A bipartisan, the Federal Pay Comparability Act of 1990 was passed by a Democratic Congress and a Republican president, and it made the pledge that over the next 13 years, which would have been about now, federal pay would be adjusted annually, both in a national level and also at a locality basis, until the gap between the federal government and the private sector was closed. And I think the gap then was 22-23%, with the government being on the losing end of the government employees. When President Clinton came in, a Democrat from a small state, Arkansas, I think, his salary as governor of Arkansas was less than the average salary of federal workers in the Washington area at that time. And I think the president and others looked at this and they said, there's no way we're going to recommend a 4 or 5 or 6% raise unless you can include benefits in the package. They called it total compensation. That didn't happen. The first time out, President Clinton recommended a zero pay raise. The Democrats in Congress overruled him, and feds got a raise. But each year thereafter, he recommended raises that were smaller than those proposed by the president's pay agents or the other machinery of this. And then when President Bush succeeded him, he followed suit and recommended less for workers. So you have this gap. It's bipartisan with people who insist that it's silly to consider compensation unless you include the whole package.
That's right. And you raise a good point that the government is legally required, or has been legally required for, you know, two decades or so, to eliminate this supposed pay gap. And there are people who I've spoken, experts I've spoken to, people who are very sympathetic to federal employees, people, you know, not the people who are, you know, trying to, who have it out for feds, who say that the fact that the government hasn't, that the president has overruled the law and not closed that pay gap is a sign that deep down they really don't think it's quite what it claims to be. There's some skepticism even inside the government as to how much these how legitimate these pay gap claims are. And one thing that you know, should be pointed out is the reason that they're saying that the pay gap grew this year is because the Labor Department estimates that private sector salaries increased 1.6%, and there wasn't a pay raise passed by Congress for federal employees this year as part of the two-year pay freeze. But there's also one thing that's got me scratching my head and I'm trying to look into. There wasn't a cost of living adjustment, but there have been step increases and there have been promotions. So federal salaries have gone up. I'm trying to find out exactly how much, but if federal salaries are going up, that's going to eat away at this 1.6% lead that they say that private sector workers have. So it's kind of an open question right now.
I remember when you broke that story, and we all knew about step increases, but nobody but you guys thought of the fact that they continue to go on. And it seems to me that every year about a third of all federal workers get a step increase, and it's worth 3%. So that's a lot of people, and it would do a lot to drive salaries up.
That's right. There are, you know, step increases are more or less 3% on average. They vary a little bit, but more or less 3%. So yeah, there's a lot of people who are getting 3% raises despite, you know, the claim that there's a pay freeze out there.
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting, and it would be neat to see some really truly bipartisan person who didn't have an ideological bent to this to see what they would conclude, whether it should be total compensation or if you go at it salaries. But you can see in the states, you know, Illinois, New York, California, all over, they're getting rid of state workers. In fact, I think they're the biggest group of biggest percentage of the newly unemployed and the currently unemployed. And the state legislatures and our governors are revolting and saying that the politicians in the past mortgaged their future by promising particularly big pensions, and then the salaries moved up to catch up with them, and the states can't afford it. And that kind of thinking seems to have come into government.
Yeah, and your point about wishing for an independent look at this, there is a GAO study underway right now. They are looking at all these surveys, and they're trying to look that come to so many different conclusions, and they're trying to figure out why they come to so many different conclusions. So that's not going to be done for a while, I believe next spring. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be several months. But I am really curious to see what GAO comes up with on this subject.
Well, you know, not to impugn anybody's integrity, because we simply don't know. But I remember one time reporting one of these tests, one of these figures that came out of the Labor Department, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and one of my editors at the Post said, "You've got the inmates running the asylum here. You've got these people whose salaries are going to benefit from this doing the measurement." And I said I thought the BLS was above that sort of thing, but that thought is out there.
Yeah, you know, and I'm certainly not impugning anybody's integrity either, but there are people I've spoken to, the pay experts, who say that the system that the government is using depends too much on statistical modeling, models based on models, to provide any accurate measurement of how the pay gap has changed. So there's questions about whether the system they're using is accurate, or whether it's too flawed to provide real accurate estimations.
Well, listen, we'll keep an eye on the Federal Times. Thank you, Steve Losey, for being with us. We'll see you here next week. Thanks for listening. Remember, the shows are archived on our homepage, so you or a friend can listen anytime. Glad to have you with us. Be safe.